Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. This is another episode in our AI and coaching series, and Kareem Harani is going to be speaking with David Pace, and they're going to be exploring the evolution of AI-assisted coaching, creating guidelines for AI coaching bots, how authority bias impacts AI coaching, and how personality impacts engagement with AI. David is an EMCC accredited career and leadership coach with a graduate degree in politics and a master's in coaching from Birkbeck University. And he coaches full time and sits on the board of the EMCC as UK Director of Digital Technology. If you're listening to this podcast and you'd like to join our ever-growing community of transformational coaches, you can head to coachesrising.com. On the homepage there, you'll find a sign-up box. If you scroll down, just put your name and email in there and you'll join our community. All right, let's dive in. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey. So I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot.
So welcome to this podcast. This is Kareem, and I have David Pace from the EMCC, who I'll ask to introduce himself in a moment, to talk a little bit more about AI and coaching as part of our AI and coaching series. So welcome, David, to the call.
Kareem, thank you so very much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, pleasure to have you. And David, maybe to start with, it would be great for people to know a little bit about you and what you're doing within the EMCC. And I know you're doing some interesting stuff around AI beyond the EMCC as well. So yeah, a little bit about you.
Of course, yes. If I sort of may then give you a couple of minutes on a shop window of David Pace. Mm-hmm. I have, for most of my career, been a web developer, building, designing, and managing e-commerce infrastructure for big leisure businesses. So I've always had a pedigree in technology and an interest in that side of things. And in 2019, I did my first coaching qualification with the EMCC, having had a coach myself and realized at that point just how transformational coaching can be. I was sort of blown away by it, and it awakened a calling in me to kind of pursue this as a career. And so I did my first qualification in 2019. I wasn't so confident at that point that I went out into the big wide world as a coach. So I subsequently went back to university to do a master's, which I am shortly going to finish this year. And in that, I have elected to do a research project around AI and coaching with a specific focus. And as part of my, desire to immerse myself in the world of coaching, I thought it would be an opportunity and sensible one at that to join the EMCC, not just as an accredited member, but as a volunteer. And so earlier this year in February, I joined as the Director for Coaching and Mentoring Technologies to help provide some clarity, to the hype around all the different types of technologies. It's not necessarily a sole focused on AI, although that does seem to be the buzzword at the moment. But any kind of technology that we might use in the fulfillment or delivery of coaching, or indeed more pragmatic solutions that coaches might use in order to be more productive or manage their coaching practice in a way that's easier to them. So I have this role with the EMCC, which is closely aligned to some personal interest that I have with technology that flows from, I guess, my career of 20 years or so in web development.
Right. Great. So we've got a rich conversation ahead. Several areas there. I'm drawn to the one we were just discussing before we started the record button, which is something that is on coaches' minds a lot. Although, interestingly, I think AI is starting to kind of turn on that hype curve, but at the same time, the fear is still there. So there's some skepticism about AI and technology in coaching, as well as the fundamental fear about will we get replaced by AI in the future. So yeah, wondering where your thoughts are with that, not our exploration.
Well, my immediate reaction, and the one that I talk about when this question raises itself, is that skepticism and that fear is something to be regarded as healthy. I think it's healthy because it sparks an interest in a subject that perhaps you don't know that much about, and perhaps it's something that you should make an effort to learn a little bit more about to try and assuage your fears or answer your questions. So I always think that rather than look at this skepticism as or cynicism perhaps as unhealthy, I think turn it into a positive and use it as something to help you illuminate some of the subjects that you might not be completely aware of. So to my views on whether that skepticism is warranted around how we whether AI is going to replace us, I it's a very difficult question to answer, and I can only answer it based on the exposure I've had to the various different AI coaching technologies. And there are very broad applications of AI in coaching at the moment. And actually, one of the most narrow and least researched is whether an AI by itself can coach by itself. There is some evidence to suggest that under sort of more simplistic narratives and contexts, an AI can do a relatively decent coaching job with models that it's been trained on, the sort of standard GROW and OSCAR models. And in that sense, it can act as a coach. And I think one of the points that I absolutely agree with you, Kareem, in that an AI coach is better than no coach. Absolutely. If you're given the opportunity and you have access to one of these tools, of which there are not many, then there are some occasions where an AI can do a fairly good coaching job. But there are other areas where AI is becoming a little bit more well known in how it can support coaching. Certainly within supervision, whereby AI can supplement the sort of review of a coaching session with more information, with more questions, with more insight as to how a coach might have approached a certain problem. And in that sense, I think that's a very useful addition rather than a replacement of any kind of coaching skill. And that would enable us to be better coaches. So it's definitely an aid in that sense rather than a replacement. And then the third part, I suppose, is how can we as coaches embrace AI to make us more efficient or more practical in the way that we manage our coaching practice? And quite apart from certain tools and products that can help you schedule your diary and manage all of your commitments, there are tools that you can use to supplement your coaching session such that if you are talking about the drama triangle, for example, and in a coaching session, you touch on it, but you never get as much time as you want to go into depth about it. You can have your own personal AI bot, so to speak, offered to your clients to say, look, have a chat with this. It will talk to you in a little bit more detail about the Cartman drama triangle and what it means and how it relates to your specific situation. And in that sense, you're providing the parameters and the guardrails in dialogue with your coachee, but you're using an AI in support of that particular topic. And that can be used in between sessions and is a little bit of added value. And again, in that sense, it's an addition. It's a supplementary tool or an activity that I think would benefit us rather than replace us. So on balance, at the moment, I certainly don't think it's anything to be concerned about. And if anything, it's probably something to be embraced a little and followed and pursued and really absorbed as to what the potential is. It does raise questions, I suppose, around how we as coaches adopt our training and development to accommodate this, which is an interesting topic and one that we do concerns us within the EMCC.
Yeah. That's exactly the question that was coming up, that given the AI will support, enhance, make space for coaching it to be, you know, more connected with the human being, it sounds like, with some of the models being supported with AI and some of that reflective practice after sessions. You know, what do you imagine the future of coaching sessions themselves will look like? And therefore, you know, what's the development that coaches might need to be focusing more on in that future as well?
A really good question. I think I have to admit that I don't have clear answers. I can imagine coaching sessions where you have an AI with you that may then, during the dialogue, pop up with questions in a chat, for example. That's a possibility, and it might be embraced by some coaches. It might not be embraced by some coaches. They might feel it's an interference. Again, there needs to be some experience, some data, some evidence to suggest that these things are going to work. And it just doesn't exist at the moment. There's relatively little research on the output of AI in a coaching environment, especially when you compare it to the general pool of research around coaching outcomes at the moment. AI is just a small amount. I mean, it's growing, but again, if you compare it to another delivery technology that has really blossomed within the field of coaching, which is online video conferencing, it's still nowhere near the amount of research that exists in support of identifying what best practice is when you're coaching over Zoom or Teams. So there's a lot more we need to learn. And because it's so unknown, we form our own nightmares to make sense of the darkness. And actually, I don't think they need be nightmares. We just wait and see what happens.
Yeah, it's a lovely point there, because it's back to some of our coach training, right? Of, you know, when you don't know, you overlay it with whether you call it your saboteur, your critic, your fear. And that's exactly what we're doing right now. And I think what I'm hearing from you is actually there's opportunity here. You know, there's more research to be done to look at the outcomes. But, you know, we don't know a lot at the moment, but, there's a lot to find out. So kind of embrace that. And you mentioned some of the concerns from the EMCC around, you know, the development of coaches and what does that mean? Just I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about what those are, and segue nicely into some of what the EMCC is doing.
Yes, of course. Just to very briefly focus on that point then is we are aware that there are lots of practitioners, not necessarily practitioners, but suppliers in the market of AI coaching technology. And we need to, as the EMCC, we need a position on whether these tools are ethical and safe to use and in support of the core coaching competencies that we would expect of any coach. But that's different, for example, as to whether you're accrediting a human coach, because we have lots of research and evidence to suggest what those core competencies are. With an AI, we can borrow from the same principles that guide us with humans, but there may be different ones to consider because of purely the huge exposure someone has to all of the data that an AI has been trained on, and perhaps the, you call it hallucinations or ideas, crazy ideas that an AI could produce in conversation if it's not being sufficiently trained. So we need to understand a little bit more of the technicalities around what these tools offer and whether we would offer a kite mark or accreditation to these providers to say that these tools are approved by the EMCC in support of better coaching outcomes. And that's a work in progress with us at the moment. So we are having to do our homework. And of course, the field changes so quickly because everything's moving rather fast with AI and technology is, or rather the applications of AI are beginning to broaden enormously to the extent where, you know, you can have conversations with your AI coach in your car, for example. And so we sort of need to keep on top of these and get a good understanding of how we might or what guardrails we might put in place to ensure that any supplier of this technology can be assured of its customers that it's safe to use and it holds its ideals around ethics and compassion for the client as completely core to its fundamentals.
Wow. And this then links to your role at the EMCC. I don't know if it's exactly your role or a part of your remit around offering those guidelines of how to best make use of the technology. So, yeah, if you want to say more about that, I've got a couple of questions.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. Well, the role is the Director of Coaching and Mentoring Technologies. So it is agnostic insofar as we don't say well, this technology is better than this technology. We're not here, or this role and this directorate is not here to offer opinion. It's here to offer evidence of how this technology works, how it works, and what the evidence of the outcomes are if you use it like this, and what the risks may be if you use it. So it's offering, I hope, information and illumination to anyone who might have questions, to anyone who might have that skepticism or nervousness. I want to provide clarity. And it's not at this stage here to provide a yes, you should definitely use it, or no, you shouldn't. It's really just for information purposes. And to that extent, it's not just about AI either. So we are shortly to release some kind of a focused set of resources around supervision technologies and the differences between supervising online and supervising in person. And in that sense, we're looking at anything that supports the delivery and fulfillment of coaching. That doesn't necessarily have to be AI, but we want to look at all the contexts where coaching takes place, understand where technology might be used to speed up or improve processes, and then understand what the best practice is that lies behind that so people can make their own opinions on whether they want to use it.
Right. Connecting that to the guardrail. So there's a kind of separate discussion around what are those credentialing guardrails that we want to have in place. And then once we've got the technologies, we're, you know, offering resources for people to make informed choices yeah. around which ones to use and where's some of the research showing the best practice around it.
That's true. Yeah. So I'm working with our accreditation teams to help them identify what the technology can do. And therefore, how do we apply the principles that we've used in accrediting humans as good coaches? What are those core competencies? How might they be applied in a technical environment, specifically around one with HR, with AI? And moreover, what the risks are if they're not applied, or how might those risks expose themselves? So what are the safety mechanisms and checks and balances that have to be in place to ensure that there can be no harm done to a client who's engaged in a coaching session or engaged in dialogue with an AI that is related to coaching?
Wow. I'm so pleased to be hearing what you're sharing, because I think one of the things I find is I look at the market and there's so many AI models out there, and to have a place where I can know it's got some kind of approval for compassion, for its privacy, for its ethical considerations. And there's a kind of trust that you can then have to know that, hey, I can use this one, but not that one because it doesn't fulfill those criteria. That feels really good, actually, as a coach to hear that that's happening. Where can a coach Coach, find out more about some of these resources that are getting created? Is there a web page or a place to look?
Yeah, so if you go to the EMCC websites, there's a, for example, in the UK, we have a spotlight series where every month we will deliver resources on a specific subject. And as I said, that we've got one on supervision coming up, and elements related around supervision. And then when there'll be one on AI later on in the year.
So a related question then, just on a personal level, what when you think about those different technologies that are out there, including AI, and maybe you're slightly focused on AI, but I'm open to you going beyond that. What is it that excites you most about what can be enhancing the coaching profession itself?
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating because historically, if you think of technology, it's always been a solution to help a process move faster, build quicker, be more efficient. So they are essentially kind of tools that make us more productive, and that's freed us up as people to manage people. So there's the belief that technology has to date managed process and people have managed people. But AI is now the first opportunity where we can use technology to converse and work with people. And that's, I think, fascinating, albeit it's based on programming and huge amounts of data and large language models and so forth. So it's still built around a sort of system or world of information that we've developed, which is why in some cases AI has some of the same prejudices and biases that we have. But the way that it has been built means that we can test it and probe it and ask it questions, and it can generate insight and ideas that we may not have thought of before. So we can get value from it by engaging with it as we would any other normal person. And never before has technology offered that insight, offered that opportunity. So that fascinates me, because we're now engaging with technology as we would with other people. And so I'm interested, and this is something that I'm looking at within my master's research, is to how, in that case, how do we form relationships with this kind of technology, specifically AI, and whether we have some of the same habits and routines that we use in conversation with other people, and whether we bring those into the types of discussions that we have with AI.
It's a nice segue into just exploring a bit of your research. So what are you researching around these biases and finding? Yeah, what are your initial findings?
Well, to explain a little bit about the research. As I mentioned, I'm sort of fascinated as to whether how we converse with AI is a reflection of how we converse with other people. And what I mean by that is when we go about our business, we carry with us certain sort of biases, shortcuts, heuristics that help us process all of this world's information and allow us to operate efficiently. And I'm interested to see whether that is the case when we talk to these AI tools, even though they are basically programs that are the world's largest, biggest calculators. But they are able to talk to us like a person. And there's a lot of evidence that suggests that we anthropomorphize this technology. So we give it human-like qualities. So it stands to reason that we may actually bring our own biases and shortcuts and heuristics into those conversations. So my research is looking specifically at one bias known as authority bias, which is this concept that because this person is an authority, because they wear a uniform, I am more willing to accept their view than I am my own view, even when I feel it conflicts with the most common of common sense, the most sensible of ideas that I may have. Just because they wear that uniform, I'm going to follow their advice. And it's quite common that authority bias has been shown to exist in areas of financial investment, in clinical settings. So this bias exists, and I'm quite keen to understand if it is relevant or is present, rather, in conversations that students have with these career coach bots. So these coach bots are becoming more widely available at universities because universities do not have many resources. And if they can use AI to support the provision of careers advice to their undergraduates, then it is more likely to be far more accessible and cheaper than human career coaches. Or at least it will be a supplement to the career coaches, whereby you can offer basic level support for most students, and where there's a need for more involved and more specific career support, you would hand over to a person. So I'm interested to understand whether students who are, you could argue, used to this sort of dyadic between the teacher and the student and that power dynamic within that environment, whether they carry this authority bias into the conversations they have with their career coach bots. So I've done some research this summer to look at whether this is the case and to establish whether a predisposition to authority bias has an impact or predicts the strength of the relationship that people have with a coach bot. Now, the evidence suggests that if you are using it once or twice, then it doesn't, there's no impact. And in fact, the functional nature of your conversation is exactly that. Help me with what is the average salary for a junior doctor in London? You know, that kind of question and answer dialogue, it doesn't actually bring anything other than answers and information. But if you use it more often, then the relationship that you have with it changes. You develop a more effective relationship, which means that you have a stronger attachment to it. And the more times you use it, the more likely it is that that bias will creep in. So it depends really on frequency of use. And actually, just to stop anyone worrying, you have to use it a lot of times. So there, unfortunately, nothing of major interest, but it was a really useful exercise to do. And I hopefully shed some light into how you design these coach bots within career services to ensure that, you know, you do provide information that is correct and that it's supervised by people, that it can't be replacing careers advisors or human careers advisors, because there is a risk that we bring certain bias. And therefore, if that information that's given out is perhaps not appropriate, not up to date, people may still follow it.
And that's interesting. So initially, when it's in kind of informational or transactional relationship, no issue with bias. But as soon as the relationship starts to develop through time, that's when people start to anthropomorphize, start having this authority bias. And just tell me a little bit more about what implications are when they do that, like the downsides of that. Potentially, I know it's believing stories that may not be their own, but someone else's. But what are some of the other implications of this authority bias coming in longer term relationships with bots?
Well, I suppose the limitations of my research meant that I didn't have the opportunity to do a longitudinal study and then really kind of delve into the detail of the impact of this. But if you look at the impact of authority bias in other contexts, whereby you're more prone to invest in stocks and shares from people who believe they are an expert. So tips, for example, racing tips, stock tips. And in actual fact, you can point to the evidence that suggests that they're no better than luck, really, or fluke. So it depends a little bit on the context as well. The authority bias first came to light in the Milgram experiments, whereby someone who was a doctor was persuading a volunteer to administer fake electric shocks, even when they could hear the patient supposedly crying out in pain. That's broadly been debunked now as something it relates to authority bias, and more focused around the situation and the fact that there is this context, this laboratory setting. It wasn't necessarily around authority bias, but it does exist, for example, in clinical settings, as I mentioned, but doctors, for example. Moreover, and most of the time, you want to believe what a doctor says. You absolutely believe they've got the training and the knowledge, and hopefully most of the time what they say is absolutely correct. But there are occasions where what they have said perhaps has warranted a second opinion or not been correct. And you have overridden your own nervousness and thoughts around that because they are the doctor, they wear the uniform. And in those contexts, harm can be done. And similarly, I am making some assumptions, and at this point they are only assumptions, but I'm making assumptions that in an environment where you're using coach bots, if they don't have the proper sort of guardrails, parameters, training, models that they've been trained on, if you anthropomorphize these people over a long period, or these coach bots over a long period of time, then perhaps you will be more influenced by what they say. You know, this case in point whereby what seems like a slightly mad example, but the person who was using one of the coach bots that helps people with depression was encouraged by this coach bot to take up a crossbow and attempt to murder the queen. I mean, so there is some silliness that exists that around the potential that an AI could cause harm. But we've seen it, and therefore we need to understand how to add the guardrails, how to ensure that the training takes place in an environment that manages for authority bias, if indeed it exists.
Right. And then in your finding, it's showing like under certain conditions, it does exist. Interestingly, it's making me think about coaching, where the role of coach is ultimately to help the person find their authority or empower them to find the solution. And certainly when I use things like ChatGPT and, you know, I do some creation of some AI bots, it, you know, as a default, the AI likes to tell, likes to fix, likes to give answers. So I can see the risks, you know, where if the AI has not got the guardrails around it, that the authority bias that might be present might invite the person to think, well, actually, should I trust that AI over my own authority? So that kind of what one of the things that comes to mind, as much as how do we create these AIs to explicitly be more empowering than hold, you know, play out that authority bias in the way that it relates as well.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'm kind of encouraged by what the gambling industry are doing at the moment, which is I've noticed this campaign, Take a Break, because I think although it's a completely different behavior, you can become, in some sense, really, really addicted. And what people are saying is take a break, you know, down tools for a while. We're not saying give up. We're not trying to give you a shock here. We're just saying pause. And perhaps that is something that we need to take into how we build these AI models, where if we can see frequent conversations and the nature of these conversations become more effective, there's more emotionally laden content, the text and the words become quite emotionally heavy, perhaps that's a cue or a trigger in the training for the AI to say, right, you need to, you know, take a break, go and see, go to the outside world for a while, and then we'll resume conversations in, you know, a week's time or something like that.
Yeah. And is that part of what you're looking at with the EMCC kind of guidelines and accreditation for AI bot companies and how they create their bots? Or I'm just curious in a little bit more detail around that, given what you've talked about with authority bias. What are some of those factors that you're considering right now? Yeah.
At the moment, we're trying to surface all the risks because we can only really act with credibility when we base our assertions on the evidence base that is available. And at the moment, we're scouring all the databases and the research that's available to look at where the risks are. And there's lots of research and data that shows where the benefits are, which is, you know, coaching is great at goal attainment and so forth. But there's not a lot that shows where the risks are. So we have to look specifically at historical context to assess where the risks have appeared from new technology adoption. It's interesting looking, researching papers that looked into the coaching online with through Teams and Zoom and whatnot. What's quite interesting is understanding the relation, what impact a break in our connection has to our relationship between a coach and a coachee. So if we are in a sense of rapport and we're getting on well together and the connection breaks and there's all this, oh, what am I going to do? Whose fault is it? What happened? Is it my internet? What happens to that rapport? And it's only by looking at where at previous examples of new technology adoption and where that's gone wrong, can we begin to infer what the risks might be with AI, because there just isn't the data and the research at the moment to kind of bring that into any more light.
Yeah. And just so therefore, you know, this question is probably more of a personal opinion than database, but what are some of your concerns and maybe even the EMCC's concerns that you have about the future of technology and AI? You know, what are you kind of noticing that you're looking at that feels scary?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, one of the things that I've been looking at sort of outside of my own research is the impact of personality in how we engage in dialogue with AI. So those high in openness, to use one of the big five personality traits, those are very high in openness, have no problem talking about anything under the sun with AI. But those obviously higher in introversion probably don't. And yet the AI will respond in the same way. Now, us as coaches, if we're engaging with someone who has much higher openness, we might be able to adopt our language to build rapport far more quickly. And similarly, if we can see someone who's very introverted, we might be a little more conscientious of how they're feeling. We want to make sure that the environment where they are being coached is particularly suitable for them. They might much prefer to be online rather than face-to-face. So we would make all these adaptations to suit the personality of the coachee. Whereas an AI doesn't see that initially. All they see is some sort of scripted input. And so I'm kind of thinking around, what risk does that present? Does it mean that AI is going to be more suitable for certain people off the bat? It's just highlighting these kinds of risks and then seeing whether there's relevance or whether there's historical precedent that we can look at.
Yeah, wow. I hadn't thought about that one. It also makes me think about with coaching the where that risk points to one of the benefits of being a human coach is that capacity to respond, to meet, to tune in, and then, you know, and then create that safety, trust for the person to open up, which is where AI might fall short in having generally kind of a data-based way of responding. You know, I know you can create personas, et cetera, which can help, but that capacity to tune in and really meet your client and who they are, where they are, you know, that might be something that coaches can focus in and develop further as AI does some of the things it can do with the diversity of people, you know, using models and stuff like that.
Absolutely right. I mean, I think psychodynamic coaching, AI has a long, long way to go before it can meet the same level of quality that many of the psychodynamic coaches can, you know, exhibit today, because transference by definition can't happen with a person and AI. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Although, you know, your authority research shows that there is a transference that might be happening from the person to the AI, but
yes,
the AI can't respond to it.
Can't respond to it.
It can't experience that side of things, which I know from, you know, psychodynamic coaching, but also other schools that bring in the relational dynamic, you know, which is very powerful if you bring it live into the room, that, you know, AI won't be able to well, as far as I can see right now, can't work with the dynamic because it doesn't experience that interrelational field, which is where I get really interested and wonder, you know, what can happen around AI in that space and definitely what can't. And again, that will be an evolving game as well. So you mentioned that as one of the risks around the capacity for the AI to meet the different types of people, personality types. Any others that come to mind around that?
Well, I think one of the things that we're also looking at is the commercial side of things. So who is benefiting by the use of these tools? So you would argue that it has to be for the benefit of the client. But if these are commercial tools, what is the opportunity that there for exploitation in some sense or form? Is there a model, a payment model that somehow ties people in to subscriptions for long periods of time if they don't necessarily need that? So there is potentially a commercial risk that needs to be surfaced and looked at and examined as one sort of point of reference for when we look at these tools and how they might be sold.
Yeah, I just made me thought about Snapchat because the way it's set up really entices my daughter to log back in to do her equivalent of likes. I can't remember what they use in Snapchat, but you know, and so she's pulled in over and over again to stay connected to the app itself. And I can, that's an interesting one with coaching, is that, you know, if the commercial model and the owner of the bot, you know, is thinking from a commercial perspective rather than the human centric perspective. I know as a human coach in supervision, I always come to that place of, you know, who is this in service of? And sometimes I have to get out my own way to come back to the client, you know, after working through my own patterns. But, you know, if the creation of the bot itself is based on how do we keep enticing people to pay more to have longer term relationships so we benefit, you know, satisfy our shareholder value, etc. That's, that's a huge risk. And again, is that, I'm guessing that's, you know, some of what might be being discussed around, you know, which are the right AI bots that the MCC can offer or recommend, or at least have the criteria so that we know the criteria that that people are using that covers some of the risk around that.
Yeah, exactly. And we've started very broad, which is, you know, speaking now, is that the principles that govern our coaching with people should be the same principles that govern the coaching between people and AI, which is broadly human-centered, compassionate, do no harm. But then you have to go into a little bit more detail because that's so broad. And what makes up the competencies that we would expect in human coaches to support those principles are very, very different in AI. And if we're going to accredit against this, we need to understand the detail. And we may never understand the detail between what goes into a foundation model and the training sets around that. But we have to know enough so that when a supplier comes to say, right, I've got this tool, it does X, Y, and Z, we can ask it enough probing questions to feel satisfied that it will apply those ethical principles that are reflected in how we coach as humans. It's a slow process, and we're not going to have any detailed answers soon, but we have sort of stepped back and said, right, well, at the very least, anything that AI does has to apply the same code of ethics and rule sets that we do as humans towards another coachee. And then you work into the detail from that, and it will be a work in progress. And it will only be once we get a body of research and evidence that really goes into this subject area, can we start to put some best practice around it.
And I have a kind of, given your, you know, computing background as well, I just have a technical question around that, because I know when ChatGPT or OpenAI, for example, is, you know, creates its large language model, and it draws on data sets, etc., and then the guiding principles, you know, that they are starting to put some boundaries of ethics around it. I haven't seen them talking about compassion or, you know, being, well, I have seen being in service to humanity. I haven't seen compassion. I haven't seen some of the ethical guidelines that I've seen, or the competencies as well, go in. So I'm curious, how do you go from a general large language model to one that has a coaching domain within it that has a different set of values that maybe would have set up the values that created the large language model?
I have a feeling your question would be better answered by one of the suppliers, but
yes,
in the back of my mind, I would think that in an ideal world, the training set, the fundamental, the foundation model that is that a GPT is trained on, would be one that is solely built on theories and frameworks around coaching. So you remove any of the extraneous stuff that, you know, has consumed all these other AI agents. These, you know, it's funny, you know, just incidentally, it's funny, I heard the other day that we're actually, the world has run out of data for it to train any further models. You know, what we've got is there. But I think if you were to build a foundation model, potentially in an ideal world, you would fill it only with the texts and the research around coaching, so that it doesn't bring with it, and I suppose actually thinking now, there's some challenges around that because, you know, a lot of the research is weird, Western educated, industrialized, and so forth. So there's probably bias built into even that research. But anyway, you know, you've got to start somewhere. But if you were to exclude all the rest of the extraneous data, which is all of the rest of the stuff that's on the internet that perhaps could give rise to some pretty crazy hallucinations, you are then giving yourself the best chance of building an AI that has guardrails built in, because it knows nothing else than that has been gone before it in coaching research and best practice.
Yeah, seems like the way forward. I hadn't thought about that option, because I've always thought, can you kind of screen off by putting some boundaries around the AI itself? And, you know, when it comes to coaching, and we've tried to do a little bit about that, you know, when you were trying to prompt an AI to coach, to kind of put some boundaries around it, some ethics around it, but it still comes back to its source learning, yeah, and we'll pull that back in, and the intrinsic biases. But I really like the idea of having a data set that is based on these principles that uses coaching data, and therefore will stay clean from some of those biases at least. That's an interesting idea. Hopefully one of the big investment companies will focus on that with the right ethical purpose behind it as well. Yeah,
it feels like the kind of thing a university should start to get behind, or at least start, because then you could do lots of testing from that. You'd have a clean model from which you could then test coaching outcomes.
Which
would be interesting.
Beautiful. And there's a question I asked earlier, which I just want to kind of follow up on now that we've been talking about AI and the opportunities and some of the risks, is, you know, what advice are you now thinking in terms of where should coaches be focusing their development in order to use those sessions? Do you have a sense of what's happening in the evolution of the competency frameworks, or what you think the quality of coaching coaches need to be thinking about once AI can support in these ways?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. And I think the fundamentals don't change, which is an adherence to continuing professional development, i.e. You're always learning. Okay. Number two, supervision, which is in essence, ensuring that you yourself are on the right track. And I think what I mentioned earlier is, use that skepticism or that cynicism as something that's healthy, and be inquisitive and learn. And I know they're very broad, but I do think they're fundamentals, and they don't change depending on what fancy new technology comes along. And that's what I've said briefly in communications that I've had, because, you know, the detail of your question, you know, what specific advice would you give? It's very difficult, because at the moment, there is a lot of hype, and you know, as you mentioned, it kind of feels like if you look at the Gartner hype cycle, we're about to see the drop. So it would be sort of probably a little foolish of me to say go out and consume everything there is to know about AI, because actually we're probably about to see a little bit of a retrenchment, given that there's no more data in the world for it to consume. and maybe just keep abreast of what's happening in the coaching world, because you will see examples resurface when there are interesting stories to tell.
Yeah, beautiful advice. That really lands for me. And so before I come to my question from AI, David, I'll ask you a question from an AI bot. Just anything else that you'd like to share either about the MCC or advice to coaches that are listening that you'd like to share that you haven't already?
I would. So I probably would share that I hope that I've provided in this wonderful podcast some thoughts and some inspiration to people who might be a little bit nervous or skeptical about AI. I can tell everyone who's listening that I share that same nervousness, but I embrace it. And something my mum always says, if something is inevitable, embrace it utterly. Now, I'm not saying it is inevitable that we're all going to be using our friendly AI coach bots to support our coaching, but it does feel to some extent that AI in some capacity is here to stay, and it's useful to learn a little bit more about it.
Looking at these questions from perplexity.ai to ask you questions, and it's fascinating. I think we've covered everyone's. So I'm going to see if there's it's got questions on the risks, the ability to dance between the two. So I've pre-prepared these list of questions and they're all covered. So I think there was one. This is a kind of out of the box one. It's probably the only one left that we didn't touch on. So the question is, 10 years from now, what excites you most about the potential for coaching and its impact with the enhancement of technology and AI? So it's including technology in that. That's a big question, given how unpredictable tomorrow is, but chance to dream.
Oh, wonderful. What excites me most about the potential of coaching? What was the question again?
Yeah, sorry? With AI and technology 10 years from now.
What excites me? I would be honest with you, and I think it's accessibility. And the opportunity for more people who so would benefit from some sense of coaching and support with their ambitions. I really do think that's an opportunity an exciting one at that. I feel that a lot of people in this world don't necessarily understand what coaching is, and if they did, they would really embrace it and use it. The trouble is they don't understand what it is, and B, if they did, they can't afford it. So if there are programs, charitable frameworks that offer coaching that uses accessible models infused with AI that are safe to use and ethically approved, then I think so many people would benefit.
Wow, that's a beautiful vision. Yeah, that really touches my heart as well, because the gifts of coaching aren't available to every single human being, probably the top 0.01%. So yeah, maybe that's the hope that AI offers, is a chance to do it safely at scale. Sounds like a lovely vision. I think all coaches will be touched by that one. Great. David, thank you so much for joining in the podcast. I've really enjoyed some of your insights and thoughts around it.
It's been a real, real pleasure, Karim. I've loved talking to you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th.
Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And Just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.